C-minus 71. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Alone again with his impatient thoughts and his extensive, some might say obsessive, wall-length research board, Dan McCarthy was starting to get physically uncomfortable. It was like an itch he couldn't scratch, like a question with no answer. He had too much faith in the messengers to think they would ever test him like this on purpose by getting his attention and then making him wait 2 full days for a follow-up, and his frustration became self-exacerbating when he began to consider that perhaps it was him who had to make the next move, that he was missing something that was already there, and that no second clue was coming. At this point, the absence of new supporting evidence even had Dan questioning his most basic existing assumption, that the Kerguelen bolide was the first event in a series, which would lead to the discovery of a new message engraved on the famously elusive fourth plaque. The media, evidently disappointed by their broad failure to turn the Kerguelen bolide into a fear-inspiring event, had almost entirely moved on. A few minutes here and there was the extent of the airtime the event now received, usually when a new piece of tangible information about the meteor's composition or trajectory was officially announced. Several high-profile antidotalists, a group of self-loathing humans who saw their species as a scourge to be eradicated, had taken to the internet to lambaste Timo's plan to spread the human virus into space through his Fiori Frontieri venture. No one paid much attention to these individuals, who were roundly dismissed as smug pseudo-intellectuals with too much time in their hands and not enough brain cells in their heads, and Dan considered the fact that they were getting so much coverage as indicative of the lack of tangible news to report. Some leading American reporters had decried in increasingly firm terms the lack of dialogue coming from once communicative facilities in Texas and Florida, contrasting the coordinated silence of today with the relative openness of the halcyon days before the NASA signage gave way to the GSC's logo and flag. But in the last few minutes, one particular public figure had gone significantly further by uttering a simple phrase that was already going viral: GSC cover-up. The man was Billy Kendrick, and Dan's mood was lifted. As Billy broadcast a live podcast from his ship, currently somewhere deep inside the Antarctic Circle, Dan nodded his head in stronger agreement with each passing word. Billy dismissed the supposedly newsworthy diplomatic fallout from the clash between GSC security staff and foreign tourists at Lake Nanso as a deliberate diversion tactic. He even went as far as to question the wisdom of his friend Timo Fiori's decision to announce the extensive Fiori Frontieri space program when he did. In Billy's words, Timo's press conference had been a positive development and eminently well-intentioned, but a distraction nevertheless from the main issue at hand. That main issue, as Billy saw it, and as Dan quickly agreed, was that the GSC's absolute monopoly on space-based observation meant that they alone were privy to the true details of the bolide's behavior. "I trust William Godfrey about as far as I could throw John Cole," Billy quipped, "and I trust his GSC about as much as I trusted Richard Walker's IDA. I know what I saw on the island of Kerguelen, and all the fake data in the world can't change what I saw and what I felt." Dan now realized that without knowing the true nature of the explosion above Kerguelen, he couldn't know anything else. If Billy was right, this could be the missing piece. An objective analysis of the meteor itself could provide all kinds of clues, with countless variables ranging from its material composition and explosive yield to the precise times and locations of its entry and explosion, all potentially being part of a larger coded message. "I believe that a cover-up of almost unprecedented proportions could well be underway in Buenos Aires as we speak," Billy said. "I don't have to explain why I'm using the term almost unprecedented, and right now, just like at the IDA, all we need is a smoking gun. All we need is a new Dan McCarthy, someone willing to put their neck on the line and get the truth out there, whatever the personal consequences might be. I understand that Timo can't put up an offer for information this time, at least not without sending himself to jail, but right now I'm making a moral appeal to everyone at the GSC. My appeal is simple. Tell the truth. If you know something, tell someone. For all we know, everything could depend on it. Godfrey wouldn't lie for you, so stop lying for him. Stirred by Billy's words, and even more so by what they meant, that the answers to the questions plaguing his mind might already be out there, just waiting to be found, Dan rose from his chair and approached his research board with newfound energy. His first move was to pick a new black pin from the box and place it as close as he could to the GSC's impenetrable Buenos Aires HQ. He then walked to the right-hand side of the long board and lifted a magnetic portrait of GSC Chairman William Godfrey from the pile of potentially important figures. Dan pinned Godfrey's smug face right next to Kerguelen, then stepped back and took it all in. Billy might not have the answer just yet, Dan thought to himself. But he's asking the right questions.